There was a time, and it wasn't too long ago, when having your own desktop computer really did mean you were on the cutting edge of technology. Even with very small amounts of memory and those clunky designs and black and white monitors, I remember those. Maybe you do too. Heck, they were a really exciting development at the time. Fast forward a few decades, and many of us now have multiple devices. I should start counting in our household. I'm going to do that while we're talking with Peter Green, my guest here. Pete's from of InfoStar of Madison, and he owns all those things too, the laptops, smartphones, tablet computers, and so forth. And PCs, maybe they're going the way of Pong. Pete, I don't know. What do you think?
Well, always great to be here, Larry. I own some things that are in the Smithsonian. I don't know if I should be proud of that. In fact, one of them I just don't have the heart to throw it away. It's like a $2,300 20-inch monitor that is on display in the Smithsonian when you walk in.
And you've got one just like, and it was $2,300.
Correct. And today, of course, it's blown away by something that's $100 or less.
And amazing.
So, you know, the question or the discussion, you know, what's going on with the evolution of the PC? Where has it been? Where is it today? Where is it going? You know, an interesting statistic is last year Apple sold more iPads than the largest seller, HP, of desktops in terms of sheer numbers. But if you look at how people are using computers, a lot of people like the quick accessibility of getting online, engaging their social media, checking their email, if you want to call that part of social media, but email was here way before even the graphical part was in place of the internet, which today we call the web. You know, if you look at like the automotive industry or really transportation, where people are using their feet, their bikes, mopeds, motorcycles, cars, and all different kinds of cars, trucks, businesses using specialized vehicles. So the whole transportation mode is, you know, segmented with all those different modes.
Yeah.
Same way the computer industry is. And as people need easy accessibility with what they're trying to do or what their workplace says they need to be doing for, you know, their job or their role in the company, they're given different devices or multiple devices to carry out those tasks. But if you look at the desktop computer and what it's really being used for in business or in home, is you've got AutoCAD. You're not going to do that on a tablet. Accounting, maybe, but probably more likely on a desktop or laptop. Desktop publishing, probably not going to happen on a tablet.
No.
Graphic design work, probably not going to happen on a tablet. Sophisticated website programming, maybe with content management and logging in and making some minor changes, but setting it up and probably, you know.
No, not going to happen.
Not going to happen. Software development, depends. You know, if you're developing it for the tablet, you'll probably have some fine tuning on a tablet, but it'd probably be easier doing it on a desktop or notebook. Audio and video editing, film editing, the creation of, you know, what we see in movie theaters, probably not going to happen on a tablet, probably not going to happen on a smartphone.
No.
A little small to do that. So is it going to go away? No. Will they continue to get more powerful? Yes. But manufacturers simply have to, you know, adjust for their audience in terms of numbers and, you know, just changing what they're producing. So it won't go away. It's just going to continually evolve. It'll get better, which is great for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I'm sitting here thinking I've got an iPhone, I've got an iPad, I've got a Mac Air, I've got a Mac
but you only got,
Pro desktop.
You only got two hands, Larry. You just name So they strategically located throughout your house?
They're a house in my pocket and in my office. And I was going to say one in the car, but really, no, not one in the car, except when I'm in the car.
And again, the car is getting better at, you know, syncing
yes.
up devices.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And in fact, I know I worked with getting a new vehicle for my daughter last year, and I insisted that she have something to sync up with her iPhone so that she would be hands-free whenever I called. I didn't want the distraction.
Yep. And actually, we have that in our cars, too. So, yeah. Wow. Pete, we've got callers online. By the way, I haven't even given the number yet, but here's your chance to join in as we talk with Peter Green of InfoStar about your computer and its software. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and post a question or a comment there, and we'd love to hear from you. Chris in Grafton has a question for you. Pete, let's go there. Hi, Chris.
Hi.
Hi.
I was wondering, when are you going to be able to stream Time Warner on an Android device?
Well, streaming the content just is a matter of the provider being able to push the content through, you know, an application or media player on the Android. If it doesn't exist, Google is really in control of the Android, and they purchased the rights to the Android platform prior to acquiring Motorola, the company that they pretty much use for producing their phones. So, you know, until it gets put on the device, or you could probably find an application that exists to stream that content, but it has to be Comcast or any other media that's streamed. You have to have a port of entry. You have to have a way to grab that. So, for example, if someone, you know, grabs or captures video and puts it up on YouTube, then YouTube becomes the conduit or the access to getting to that content.
Right.
If Comcast doesn't, you know, live stream that content, then you can't have access to it. If Netflix says, hey, you can stream it, and I've seen it streamed on multiple devices at the same time, then they've created that means of entry or conduit to get to their content. So part of it becomes a licensing issue, especially, with cable access or satellite content, there are licensing issues, and they look at that as an infringement upon their revenue model. And there are legal issues as related to that as well. So there's software out there that says, hey, you can get like 3,500, you know, TV internet channels around the world. Are they, you know, legal channels? Well, they're channels, but, you know, what is the access point to those channels? Yeah. It might be through somebody that's actually propagating the signal illegally, but it's being touted as, hey, it's one of 3,500 internet/TV channels you have access to if you buy our application for $29.95.
Yeah. So there you go. Chris, thank you for calling. Arlene in New Berlin, I want to give you a chance. Hi, Arlene. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. I'm glad you have your show on. I don't know if I'm going to get my answer or not, but anyway, here goes. What causes a screen to fracture when you're doing something, like, say, maybe playing a game? And my son said something about rebooting it. The other thing is, last month you talked about a website to go to kind of see what's wrong with your computer. You know, I have antivirus. I have two of them, and they automatically update. That's the way it was set up because I wasn't sure if I could do it myself. So the company I went to put that in. If you can give me the answer, I'll take my question off the air.
Hold on a second.
Okay.
Were you referring to initially about the screen having a problem?
Sometimes you play a game, which I do once in a while, and it'll fracture on me. You know, like, is it because I'm maybe moving too fast on the board, or is it because I just need to reboot the screen again?
So you're saying it becomes distorted?
Yes, that's the word I was looking for. I guess I didn't have the right word.
So it pixelates a little bit, maybe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, there could be a number of things going on with that. One is it could simply be a hardware problem with the monitor. If it's only happening with the games, and the game is actually pushing the card to the limit, it could be a problem with the memory in the card that could be causing that to happen. It could be an outdated driver, device driver for the video card.
Well, see, this is my husband's computer.
Okay.
He's since deceased, but I don't know that much about a computer.
So device driver.
So the device driver is what how the computer actually talks to the card and tells it to do the images and the gaming things that, that you're trying to experience. So if those things become outdated, sometimes you may have exposed a bug or a flaw in the driver that you have on your system, and they may have fixed that. So that's one possibility.
Uh-huh.
As far as you know, the antiviruses on your system, you said you have two of them. Do you know which ones?
Norton Antivirus and McAfee.
Okay. Okay. They're actually from the same company.
Uh-huh.
And usually they try to fight for control of your system.
Oh.
You know, I personally have not seen both of them on one system. But if you keep it updated and it's been working for you, you know, it'll work fine. If you sometimes when you're installing software on your system, you need to turn it off or disable it because it tries to have too much control.
Oh.
And in fact, in the instructions of some software, they tell you to turn off the antivirus because it'll interfere with the installation and you may not successfully install it because of that.
I had the computer overhauled after my husband passed away and from iNet, and so I feel as though it's pretty safe.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's true or not, but
I always say if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah.
So if it's working fine for you, other than the video piece that you referred to with the gaming.
Yeah.
I can tell you how to try to do it, or you can just, you know, if you're familiar with someone that's worked on your system, you know, when something else comes up, you may want to just, you know, put that down as something to ask and have them check out.
Yeah, that makes sense. Thanks, Arlene, for calling and good luck. Appreciate your call. And just to go along with what she was asking about, Jenny sent us a Facebook question. Her father-in-law would like to know if Norton Antivirus is the end-all, be-all in virus protection. He has a new laptop he runs on home wireless. His trial period with Norton is expiring, so he's looking to purchase antivirus protection. And you usually say you should have probably a couple if you're going to.
Well, the ones that are out there that are free, and I really haven't heard any complaints about them, and usually you can save some money. There's Avast and AVG. There are a few others out there that you can search for. I have links to a whole bunch of them off at Infostar.com. If you go to the Infostar Virus Info Center page and then look on the left-hand side for A-V Help, you'll see a whole bunch of links. There's even like a big list out there that's got, you know, like all of them out there. The key thing with having Norton on a system is if you want to get rid of it, you really have to, you know, you have to go through the uninstall, and they've gotten better about, do you really want to remove me and never use me again? And then it'll get rid of all the excess baggage that it leaves behind. If you tell it that you're going to use it again, then it may leave its signature, which could, you know, interfere with other installs. So
you're done with it forever, even if you might not be.
The other part that we haven't really mentioned that we've talked about numerous times over the years is the fact that Norton, McAfee are really the leading antivirus programs out there. And one of the problems associated with that is that it's a target. And because it's a target, there's no 100% guarantee that your system is completely protected. And the reason I say that is because there are all these constant alerts about infections and how someone's breached the security. So if you want to say the population at large that's using Norton and is using all these antiviruses out there, if you don't keep it up to date and the security's been breached, and you happen to be out there and receiving on the receiving end of a suspect email or a malicious email or a website that you might visit that's, you know, trying to, you know, create an attack on your system, if you haven't kept up to date with it, then, you know, your system's susceptible. So with Norton being a target and all those millions and millions of computers out there, someone's going to have their security breached. And, you know, who is that? No one knows, but it happens because it's just a large target and people are trying to go after it. And they know there are a lot of users of the system. They know there's a lot of people that are not keeping them current. And I can't tell you how many systems I've been on in individual businesses and homes where I click on a Norton antivirus and it's like, oh, it expired last year. You know, what do you want to do? And, well, how long has that system been exposed? Well, months, you know, almost a year, you know, a full year. So, you know, with it being a large target, I usually tend to go to the alternatives because more than likely that's not the one that's going to get hit. And if you keep that up to date, you're getting the same alerts that Norton is getting. And I think you're just a little bit better protected that way.
Amy and Madison, turning to you in just a second, though, but to remind everybody else, if you're listening today, you're listening to Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, who visits with us monthly to help with your personal computer problems. And when you call, our producer, the wonderful and kind Judith Sears Poisson, answers your phone call and puts you on the air to talk to me, Larry Mueller, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking computers today with Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our personal computer consultant, and we're moving to Amy next in Madison. Amy, thanks for waiting. Hi.
Hi. I am wondering what your recommendation is for a tablet. I mainly would be using it for just, you know, general internet surfing, and I have a laptop, so I wouldn't need it for any kind of word processing or anything like that. But the other thing besides the internet would be for videos. I'd like to either to have it where I could, a good one that could stream videos from like Netflix or something, or also just use it with downloaded movies. And just looking to see what you can recommend for the best one.
Okay. Well, the most popular one is Apple's iPad. There's been three versions of them out there.
We have two of them at home, versions.
You know, depending upon budget, you know, the first one has video, but it doesn't have dual cameras. The second one is the one that started with the dual cameras front and back. And I believe it's a 5-megapixel for video. But as far as watching video, the second one is the one that has HD resolution, and the third one does as well. Samsung makes a competitive product. They, in fact, make a competitive product in the smartphone marketplace. I believe they have a OneNote, and they have like an Galaxy S3. So, you know, and some people, depending upon budgets, you know, you look at your phone and you look at your tablet and go, well, maybe I should combine the two. The other thing is, so you like the new iPhone 5 is, I believe it's a little bit over an inch compared to like the 3GS model. So
an inch bigger.
And you look at the video on these small ones and they're pretty darn crisp and clear. As far as, you know, size, there are larger tablets, but generally with the, iPad size screen, to watch video on the tablet itself looks great. You can also cable them up to actual TVs and play the video that way. I have an HD hookup. Then it becomes a matter of also deciding, you know, whether or not to. The basic ones come with the Wi-Fi feature, but you have to have the Wi-Fi access point. And there are tablets that have the ability to be powered by the internet without having a Wi-Fi access point, but the cost of that service is more.
But you can do that on a monthly basis.
Okay.
You can
rather than making an annual commitment, just do it on a monthly
basis.
For
the month. Yeah, if you're going to go on vacation,
right?
We usually, like, if we're going to go on vacation in Disney or someplace,
right?
We'll just take it for that month.
Yep. And then the other thing is, you've got Amazon with the Kindle products. Barnes & Noble puts out, I believe it's called the Nook. So some of those tablets are attractive. They're lower cost, but it's a matter of whether or not it does what you want. So you've got choices out there. And then it becomes, you know, on a cost stand basis, you know, standpoint, you know, how much you want to invest in that. And I believe the Apple iPad version 3 is $499 for the 16 gig Wi-Fi.
Right.
And then it goes up. But you have to decide how much memory you need. Now, deciding on memory is another issue. So if you're going to load it up with music and, you know, download a bunch of videos to it and then start taking pictures and you're using, you know, 5-plus megapixel pictures, that starts adding up pretty quick. You kind of have to weigh that, whether or not you want the 16 or the 32, which I think is about $100 more. So, and the iPad is the market leader. So you really need to do your comparison with what is popular and what the other players have, and just go from there. So hopefully
that help out?
I think so. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call.
I know I can speak for Larry. It's so convenient to just simply, you know, either touch it and if it's not locked and it's in your house and you just touch the screen, it's there.
It's there.
And you just decide what you want to do with it. You put in all your email accounts, you hit email, boom, they're all there. You can have them either separated in separate email accounts or all collectively brought in, you know, browsing the web, your video streams, all that stuff. It's just a matter of making a decision what you want to do with it.
In our case, because we have Macs, now I got this MacBook Air last week, and because we have all Macs, I think it's easier to program everything in. I mean, it took me like 15 seconds to set up the settings to put in all my phones and, you know, the numbers and the email addresses, right, and all that. It was just done.
You know, some that you just mentioned that I think should also be factored in is when you look at alternative devices and the devices that you have, it helps to be consistent with operating systems,
right,
and with manufacturers.
Right.
And, you know, the Android operating system really stands by itself in terms of a smartphone and a tablet. But it's not really found on a desktop or a laptop,
right,
or, like you said, a Mac Air. Same thing with different flavors of Unix or Linux. You don't find those things in multiple devices. So it becomes a question of how transparent do you want that the other devices to be in your lifestyle?
Yeah.
Because you have to switch a mode in your brain to function with, oh, this is how I do it with this. But I don't do it that way with the other devices.
Yeah, see, so my mind doesn't work well that way.
But that has a value, too, that a lot of people don't factor in.
Yeah, absolutely. Keith in Mineral Point, hi.
Good morning, you guys.
Morning.
I'm hoping you can help me decide if I got a virus or not.
Okay.
I work with a desktop iMac, and I have email with Frontier.
Okay.
And about 50% of the time when I reply and I push send, my screen goes into half light and this other box comes on and it looks like it has graffiti written across it, block letters that kind of cover each other. It says copy these letters and then you can go on, but it won't let me send my email unless I copy. I haven't done it yet, but it's just a weird image on my screen.
Well, it's definitely something that shouldn't be happening.
That's what I wondered. I wondered if I should just go ahead and copy it.
Sounds like a security thing. You know, when you're on a site, sometimes they'll say, okay, copy these letters in, and if you can copy these letters in, we'll know that you're not...
So it's not a virus?
Is that what it's asking you to put in these... it's interacting with you to complete a box where
it says copy these letters, and then is a box, little oval, says continue.
Yeah. But is it asking you to fill in the box with
to repeat it?
So it's asking you to type in those letters, yeah. Right?
Right, and they're block letters that are kind of, they look like graffiti on the side of a box
card. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's security.
Yeah, it sounds like a permission question.
So it's okay to do it.
Yeah.
Fantastic! You helped me out a lot.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate
you
your call.
You only see that on certain.
Yeah, you don't see it.
You know what's annoying about that is sometimes they throw those up. Even Facebook does it, and you look at it and go, "What are they?"
Yeah, what is that letter?
Yeah. Or what is that number? You can't tell if it's like an N or an H or a U or a V. You know, and it could get real frustrating because I've had to do it where you try it multiple times to get it right.
Yeah. So. No, I know. Dan in Jackson County, on to you. Hi, Dan.
Yeah, I'm glad you guys take multiple times to do that sometimes. Say, I heard you earlier, and you talked about on the webpage you had all kinds of different protection, different sites you can go to for protection. I use Security Essential as my kind of all the time. And when do you know whether you're using malware or other protection, and how many different things you should use when they clash with each other, and how do you make those determinations?
When they clash with each other.
I'm sure you couldn't have, you know, if you end up and you got Securities Essentials, and you got Norton, McAfee, you got, you can't, they won't all go on at the same time.
Okay, as related, you know, I think it was for a couple of years after Microsoft came out with Security Essentials, I really liked it a lot, but then it started bogging down the systems that I was supporting, so I pulled it off. And it wasn't really fully protecting the systems as I thought they should be.
Okay.
So what I usually recommend is using something like AVG or AVAS. There's another program that works well as a substitute for Security Essentials, which is called Malware Bytes. I think a caller recommended that. It must be probably 10 years ago. But it's
BYTES.
Yep.
BYTES.
Yeah, so it's
BYTES.
Yeah, so it's malware, MALWARE BYTES.
Okay.
And so you can do a search on that, whether or not you use Bing, Yahoo, or Google.
Okay.
And they'll tell you you need to update them after you download them because they're never fully updated after you install them. And just, you know, keep them current, and they work well together. Microsoft Security Essentials is really catered towards spyware, malware, and some virus protection, but it seems like it's a little bit too much tied in with Microsoft's operating system, and it just bogs it down and makes it perform slower because it's almost like it feels like it's got to do everything in the background, and when you try to run the applications and it's turned on, it just seems like the computer's dialed a notch slower, and that I've been frustrated when I've worked on systems with it.
Okay. Do you use any other ones? Or those two are the two you'd use and not get into three or four or five?
No. You don't need that many.
Okay. So those are your top two recommendations?
Correct.
Yep.
Okay. Hey, thanks a lot, partner.
Yep. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much for calling. We had a Facebook question from Jerry. Has a Galaxy Tab 2, but have only used it through my home wireless network to connect to the internet. Considering getting a data plan for it, but since the plan is data time dependent, will a tablet be a data time hog? Does a tablet use the web for updates and whatever or of its own volition, thus running a tab up on my data plan?
Well, you can turn off updates for any device. You can turn it off for desktop, smartphone. You don't have to have stuff pushed to you. You know, I've had an unlimited data plan on my iPhone for close to 4 years, and then they went to metered access. And, I mean, I use it a lot, and the metered access would be like a 2-gig plan, and that's... Does it sound like a lot? Well, you know, two gigs, fair amount, but, you know, unlimited's a lot better. And I think the most I've ever used it in a month's time is like maybe over a gig. So it's a matter of how much are you doing on the tablet. I mean, if you're streaming video constantly, that kind of download's a lot heavier than if you're just simply doing text and maybe Skyping somebody, and email and some web browsing. It becomes a matter of, looking at what you're using it for, monitoring it, and seeing whether or not, you need to bump it up or you can even step down. The same thing with like AT&T service and using anytime minutes. They turn on all these different features in the service, and all of a sudden you start going crazy with having all these free anytime minutes because it's mobile to mobile and calling cell phones. They don't charge you for that. So, yeah. You have to just monitor what you're using it for and see what the bill looks like.
Email from Mary Jo. I attempted to download Skype on my home desktop computer, but received a message that there was not enough space on the hard drive. Mm-hmm. Is this something I can do myself, create more space, or do I need to bring it into my computer person and have him do it? My PC is several years old.
Yeah. Probably, if you haven't done what I'm going to mention, you probably be able to free up some space. One of the things is to right mouse click on the recycle bin. And, depending upon the version of Windows, and more than likely, if it's XP or Windows 7, doesn't matter. You right-mouse click on the recycle bin, click on Properties, and resize that recycle bin to 1%. We've talked about this before. That'll free up gigabytes of space. If you, with Windows XP, if you click on Start, and then right mouse click on My Computer, and then click on Start, click on Accessories, and then System Tools. Go into System or Store, and you can click on Resize or Changing the System or Store settings so it's no longer using 12% but 1% of your hard drive space. You can also do that in Windows 7. The access to it's a little bit different. But you can free up roughly 20% of your hard drive space that's being allocated by Windows just
like
those
that.
Two functions.
Just like that.
So that'll probably give you enough room to install Skype. The other thing is you could probably download an application before you download Skype called CCleaner. And it's just C and then Cleaner. And you can search for that. When you download that, if you install it and then run that, you can probably free up a lot of space by getting rid of temporary files and just a lot of excess baggage on your drive just by simply using that.
Yep, good tips. We had, Rob in Baraboo was after both of us. It disappointed in both of us. he suggests, we said during the show that using a hands-free phone while driving a car reduces the chances of an accident. He says several studies have shown that a hands-free device is just as dangerous as a regular cell phone, and in fact, the level of impairment is as high as someone who's legally drunk.
Wow.
So we should not be recommending.
Well, I feel safer that she's just not grabbing the phone than grabbing it. I don't really encourage her to be talking to me and driving. And in fact, I try not to do that in any kind of heavy traffic. If it's light traffic, I feel comfortable with it. But it's not something I don't want to be talking on the phone all the time when I'm driving anyhow.
Susan says, how do they, in quotes, speaking of, that ubiquitous they, determine that half of adults have smartphones or iPads and so forth? Surely not by sales. The people I know who have them generally replace them annually or more often because they break easily or become out of date quickly.
Or they lose them or drop them in the toilet.
Or drop them in the water like I did. Let's see, I had a phone once, 3 days. Dropped it in the, and of course I didn't take the insurance out. Dropped it in the drink.
So how do they come up with those numbers?
Yeah, how do they come up with those numbers?
You know, it's it's like anything, you know, with statistics, you take a sampling and try to extrapolate that to the, you know, the population. There are also manufacturers, as part of their financials, have to report certain details, especially if they're public companies. So they, you know, they try to analyze that and extrapolate it out to, you know, the population at large, to just, you know, from a marketing standpoint, what kind of penetration they have.
Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our guest. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Peter Green of InfoStar, talking with us every month about help, how to help you with your personal computer problems. Len in Madison has a question for you, Pete. So let's go there. Hi, Len.
Hi, how are you today?
Good.
Say, I have a computer that is, it's an older IBM, about 7 years old now, but it's a good one. Anyway, we had a fatal error message, internal hardware fatal error. Everything went out, and I did a complete system recovery. I had to, after trying so many different ways to try to get it back up. Well, after that failed, I called technical support, and they said for $120, they'll go into my computer, fix the problem, and charge my credit card. I want to know, if I do this, am I just fixing a problem temporarily, where I'm going to have this happen maybe again in a week, and I have to come up with $120 again? Does anybody guarantee that if it happens again, they won't charge me a second time?
So are you saying they're going to come to your place?
No, they do it over the line. They actually go through my cable. And I've seen them do this. They take control of my computer. It's like they've got control of a mouse, mm-hmm. and they're flipping around faster than I ever could.
Right.
And they say, we found 115 things wrong with your computer. Mm-hmm. It'll cost you $120. We're going to go in there and fix it. And I said, well, wait a minute. I'm not going to do that. I don't want to put out $120 to somebody I don't know. It's a foreign language. Mm-hmm.
So when you say you're getting this fatal error, what kind of error message you...
I had so many of them. It was internal fatal error. There was some, I'm trying to recall, but it was hardware.
Who is General Failure and why is he on my hard drive question?
I don't remember all of the messages. All I do mm-hmm. know is that the screen went black. Mm-hmm. I had to interrupt the start of the computer to go into a complete recovery.
Mm-hmm. Now, did it give you a number, a phone number?
No, I got that through my internet
provider. So it wasn't, all right, because I've heard of that, mm-hmm. sort of blackmail type.
Right.
Well, yeah, my internet provider, Charter, gave me the phone number to Microsoft support.
Okay.
And then people with, I'm going to say, you know, I don't want to name a country, but it was a foreign language accent,
right.
more than one. Mm-hmm. They're saying, hey, we can fix this.
Right. Well, they typically outsource their help desks, you know, overseas, and there's programming that's outsourced like that as well. The thing that concerns me is if you're having any kind of hardware issues, the connectivity to even getting into your system can be compromised. So, until, you know, I know what those messages say, sometimes it's getting a hard drive error can be caused by a faulty power supply. Well, someone over the phone line or cable is not going to be coming out and changing a power supply in a computer, which is causing the actual system to not operate correctly at all.
Right.
So, the error messages themselves, and sometimes they come up with weird numbers or combinations of letters and numbers and symbols. You can actually do searches on the internet and see the definitions of what those error messages mean. What is actually wrong with the system?
That's all I have to do because they are symbols. A lot of symbols mm-hmm. and the message is
right.
garbled. But so, all I know is I can't get the computer to do anything but black screen me.
Right. And sometimes there are conflicts that are created because there is a hardware failure. And the error message will tell you that. And sometimes, for whatever reason, maybe you updated a piece of software, and that's caused a conflict with a device driver for the video. So there are a variety of different causes, some as simple as a hardware failure, and others as I don't want to say simple, but some kind of conflict that's been caused by either the operating system, even an operating system upgrade. I've had that happen with my son, and I've talked about that before, where Microsoft threw an update on his Vista laptop and, you know, brought it crumbling down and said, how the heck do I get it back? And it was a known bug flaw in Microsoft applying an update. And, you know, here he is away at school, and, you know, he's like, Dad, troubleshoot me because I need my computer back. So there are a wide variety of causes to those problems. But for someone to say for $120, I'm going to get in on your computer over cable or phone line and fix it, they should offer money back guarantee that if they don't, then, you know, you don't owe $120. Because it just sounds a little fishy to me.
Yeah. And good luck. Thank you very much. And there again, you know, a local shop. Mm-hmm. I'd be tempted to take it to a local shop because at least a local shop, you know.
Yeah. Generally speaking, a good repair technician that's got experience, if you bring it in, they're generally going to be able to say, it looks like this or that.
Yeah, and it's going to cost you this much.
Maybe they're going to charge you some exploratory fee and time to assess it. And that's what car dealerships do, too, to try and assess what's going on. They have a diagnostics fee to just,
I can understand the reluctance. But going local, I think, really adds a little bit of safety to the whole thing.
Now, here's the other flip side of the whole thing is you put $120 into fixing how old of a computer.
Yeah.
Versus if you've got access to your data, you know, the cost of laptops and desktops has dropped dramatically, but the performance is improved. So
way improved.
Then you start looking at, okay, 120 versus maybe just, you know, going to like $300, and you've got some choices of replacing old with new.
Yeah.
And then you have some guarantees, at least from a warranty standpoint.
Absolutely.
So that's
something to think about too, Len.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for calling, by the way. Joe in Franklin, it's your turn. Hi, Joe. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and Peter. Speaking of old for new, my old computer, and I mean my old computer, had about half a gig of hard drive, and so I used floppies for storage. Found a box of floppies. Wonder if there's a device out there that I can slap them into to move them over to my real computer.
So you're talking about 3.5 inch or 5.25?
3.5 inch.
Okay. You don't want to go back to the 5.25 that's really flopped.
No, I won't go back that far.
Okay. Are those out there? You could probably take a look and I would go to some of the popular sites like buy.com and tiger.com, Tiger Direct, and see if they sell those devices. I don't know if you could walk into a store and find them at like a Staples or Office Depot or Best Buy.
Probably anymore. Get on the phone and call and just see, but I doubt it.
I don't know if they actually manufacture them, but probably the last year that they manufactured them, they probably made such an incredible supply that they're probably still, somebody probably bought the warehouse and, you know, private labeled them and is selling them for, you know, $20 or $29.95 or something, because you can buy, you know, external CD and DVD drives for that price. So, or you can go on eBay and probably find some as well.
There you go, Joe. Thank you for calling. And Ian in Brookfield, hello to you.
Hi, my question pertains to the smartphone industry and how they come up with some of their products that they release.
Yeah.
I surf a lot of the new tech sites like Gizmodo or tech blogs and stuff, and I see all these cool concept phones like smart glass phones and wrist phones, yet like a lot of the phones I see coming out all like very similar in facade, like the iPhones kind of all look the same. Yeah. Like as a case study, I was just thinking back to like when the Razr came out, like it was very unique looking, you know, kind of shook things up. So to summarize, like, what are some of, like, the major companies looking at now to try and appeal to their customers, and why does it seem to just be based on speed or, like, contracts, and why aren't they kind of shaking up the design?
What do you think, Pete?
Well, I think one is that the displays are moving towards, you know, the smaller tablet size.
So like the larger ones?
Yeah, you know, well, iPhone moving a little bit larger, the Samsung devices moving larger. People want to see more on the phones, and you need a little bit bigger screen. And, you know, stuff with concept, you know, we've always been teased in the automotive industry where they show these concept cars and then you don't see them for 10 years.
Or never.
Or never. And it's frustrating because it's going, wow, that's really cool. Yeah. And then you never see it. But they go, oh, we're putting this piece into this other car and that piece into another car. You know, why don't you just give us what you're showing us and be done with it? So I think this, you know, the same thing happens in the smartphone industry and others like it, where they tease us with what may be, but they never bring it out for, in the immediate future. So
yeah, I just want a wrist phone really bad. So
yeah, you know, as far as I think some of the issues become in terms of downsizing the phone itself in terms of weight and speed and memory and battery life, you know, speed, processing power, powering the display, because the resolution of the display is not just happening. It's happening because there's a processor for that display and there's memory for that display. There's memory for the phone itself. So you've got all these things that need to be packaged together, and then it needs to be able to actually work and last for more than an hour or two. So when you start putting all these things in a concept phone and one piece of the technology is not up to snuff, they probably table it until that other piece catches up. And how long does that other piece, how long does that other piece catch up? It may take years.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yep. Yeah. Thanks a lot for
calling.
And
that's stuff that we don't see or hear about.
No, no, you're right. Greg in Door County. Hello to you.
I have a I'm running Windows XP, and I have a computer, a Dell, that had some problems. So I called Dell to get a fresh a copy of the XP operating system, which didn't come originally with the computer, so I had to pay for that. Well, I paid for it, bought it, and then I reinstalled XP, doing a fresh install. But I come up. I'm running Microsoft Essentials, and it keeps coming up with an error that says Microsoft Essentials detected a Trojan virus, and if I'll spell it. I don't know if I'll say it right. It's Aerlon, A-U-E-R-L-E-O-N, and then that it says it's on a boot sector 17. So I know that's a mouthful, but my question is that something you've ever heard of, that particular virus? And then why, if Microsoft Essentials is detecting it, doesn't it remove it? It says it's cleaning the computer and I need to restart. So it'll say I cleaned it. Do you want to restart? And then I answer yes. Turn the computer back on. And it happens over and over and over again. And I also purchased a software called Fixit Utilities that I thought might take care of it. And that didn't do anything either. So I did the 90-day return on that one. So I'm just curious what would your opinion on a situation be?
So you did a clean install on your system.
Yep. A clean install.
And you didn't install anything else other than just working with the operating system of Microsoft Essentials, and it's kicking back that you've got something on your system.
Yep. And it identifies a sector and mm-hmm. on the hard drive.
Well, one thing I would do when I see messages like that is I usually do a search on the message to see what else.
I did that.
Okay. Yep. And what did you come up with?
It instructs programs to not run or do. You know, that's the one thing I guess I wish I knew a little more right now. It said it'll tell a program not to do something. You know, it'll redirect in your registry.
Okay.
And I do run CC Cleaner, by the way.
Okay. Well, one thing is to, as long as that file that it's pointing to is a non-essential or a critical file, you could actually remove that file.
I tried that, and I ran Microsoft Security Scan, I think it's called.
Okay.
And I came up with it, but I don't know where the file, what what the file actually is called. I tried to do a search for it.
Well, there in my tips on my tips page, the very last, I think it's like the very last tip, there is a program that if you go through it, it's it finds programs that are running in memory.
Okay.
That are kind of in the stealth mode, and it tells you where they are.
Oh, okay.
Trying to remember. It's like a it's some kind of security program to just find files on your system for programs that are running. And then once you identify the location, you can use a program like Malwarebytes. And within that free program, it's got an assassin tool. So you can actually, using the assassin tool, browse to that file and actually delete it.
Okay.
Even if it's hidden to the, kind of like hidden to the operating system, or you can't find it any other way other than exposing it with the first tool. But in the tips page, I give you all the links and how I went about removing these infiltrating programs that were annoying and needed to be removed. With that being said, I would probably also turn off Microsoft Essentials and probably use, you know, a couple of the antivirus programs we talked about.
Yeah, there you go. And good luck to you, Greg. Appreciate your call. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our guest today, as we talk with him about computers and computer software problems. He'll be with us right up until 12:30 here on the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, with so many of our of us using computers every day at home, at work, in the car. We rely on them a lot. And, of course, I rely, and maybe you do too, on Peter Green. Pete's an independent computer consultant. Comes to us the first Monday of every month to help us with our computer problems. Pete, great to have you back.
Always great, Larry.
And you have a top 10 list for us as well.
As always. And if you go to InfoStar.com, either click on the current top 10, or if you go to the top 10 archives and scroll down to today's date, they're all there. This first one is really cool. An AT&T technician told me about this, and it's a free app, file manager for basically iDevices, iPhone, iPad, iTouch. It's called i-funbox.com, and basically allows you to manage files between the devices with a very easy-to-use interface program. This next one is a free service that my girlfriend Kelly told me about that is lets you create these avatars. So you can create an avatar, which is a animated being, and let it speak whatever you want it to speak on your behalf. And it's called Voki, V-O-K-I.com.
Judith needs one of those.
I think we all need an avatar that speaks for us. number three is animationlibrary.com, and it's just a very large free animation collection. Number four, I'm sure a lot of people have seen this because they claim they have nearly 6 million ratings to date. So when you use web services or products, people are using TrustPilot.com to share reviews about products and services that they use online. Number five, I saw this on a, I think it was like a late night news broadcast, and it's called EdisonNation.com. And it's a fee-based, so there's money associated with this, but it allows you to submit a business invention idea and maybe get it to the next level. So if you're struggling with something and you want to see where you may be able to take it, you've got some professional opinions to work with you on that. And they've got examples of what they've worked with. Number six is zipmap.net, and it's a searchable zip code boundary map for all the U.S. states and possessions, accessible by graphical maps. Looks pretty cool. Number seven is for Twitter users. It takes Twitter tweets and turns them into visual displays, typically cartoons, and it's called twaggies.com, T-W-A-G-G-I-E-S. And we mentioned a product, I think it was a couple of years ago, called Fantastico. Well, there's another one that's come out. And what does this thing do? Well, it's called Softaculous, S-O-F-T-A-C-U-L-O-U-S.com. and it's used by web hosting companies. They call these programs like Fantastico and Softaculous revolutionary in that it makes it easier to use web hosting services and the products that they need to get them online for the creator of websites to make it happen faster and better. So if you don't want to know the nuts and bolts of how something installs, these kinds of programs install listservs and web content management programs to allow people that want to use websites with all these really neat tools. They have 275 scripts to install all these features to make a website more feature-rich. Number nine is everydayhealth.com. And again, just a searchable web resource for health, nutrition, and fitness. You know, something really great to check out. And the last one is for Wisconsin's Recaller Report System. Gives you access to court cases, reporting, sex offenders, tax delinquents, and petition searches. And it's called putwisconsinfirst.com.
There you go.
And they're all there.
And all there at infostar.com.
That's correct.
All right. Mark in Waupun has a question for you, Pete. So let's see what's on Mark's mind. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
Hi.
Have you ever heard of a program called Sandboxy?
Sandboxy?
Yes, Sandboxy.
I've heard of Sandbox, but not with the Y.
Or IE.
Well,
or IE.
Yeah. It's a great freeware product. It has a paid version for like around $40. What does it? It sandboxes your browser, and since I've had this program, I've had hardly any issues with viruses or malware since I've been using it. I mean, occasionally, you know, if you download something, you still can get infected. But you don't, with your sandbox, you don't have to worry about getting infected by just visiting a website.
Okay, so it's kind of like running like a screening process before you're getting to the site to allow you to safely interact with it.
Yeah, Sandbox's motto is trust no program.
Okay.
And it encapsulates your browser.
Okay.
That's cool.
Yeah, it sounds very interesting. I'm going to check that out.
Sandbox, and so it's Sandboxie?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. There we go. Thanks a lot, Mark. Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
We'll give it a look. Gary in Whitewater. Hi.
Hi. I'm having a problem. I bought Kaspersky as a virus protection, and I downloaded it. When I tried to install it, it gave an error message that I have to get rid of McAfee. McAfee came with the computer a while back. And so when I tried to uninstall McAfee, I get a white square about half the screen tall and with nothing in it, and I can't really do anything after that. And I'm wondering, how can I get rid of McAfee?
Well, to get rid of McAfee, if you have to, I guess, digitally remove it, you know, in other words, do surgery under the hood, one is to, and I'm going to make an assumption, but you can tell me, are you're using Windows 7 or XP or this? Which version of Windows are you using?
I think it's Windows XP.
Okay. What you need to do is go under Program Files off of your C drive, and there'll be a folder that will be identified more than likely in, say, McAfee. Mm-hmm. And that's where the program files reside. But then you need to use a program like and I'm saying this because you're telling me you tried to uninstall and didn't do a clean uninstall.
Right.
The very first thing is, if you haven't done this, you go into the control panel and go into add remove programs and look at for McAfee on the list and try to remove it that way. If that doesn't happen, then you need to go into the program files folder off of your C drive. Mm-hmm. So that's off of the main, that's going to be a main folder, and then locate McAfee, and you would delete those files and empty them from your recycle bin. And then you would download a program like CCleaner, which has a registry cleaner in it, And you need to run the registry cleaner because it's going to have entries in your registry that refer to McAfee that are no longer valid, and you need to remove those from your system.
Uh-huh.
So you download CCleaner, so it's C and then cleaner. Okay. The company is called Piriforms, P-I-R-I-F-O-R-M. I believe it's S, but you'll be able to search and find. It's very popular. You can download the free version from their site. And then once you install that and run the registry cleaner and you get rid of the bad links, and I always recommend at least backing up the registry when it asks you that question, is then you want to do a shutdown reboot on your system and then try doing the install of the other software.
Okay. Yeah, I will try that.
Yep. All right. So the key thing to know for anyone out there is when you have problems uninstalling software, sometimes there are these loose links that are left behind, and for whatever reason it's blocked from getting off your system. As you go into these program folders where the actual programs reside, and you remove the files off your system,
yeah.
But then the operating system is still seeing these links, and you have to clean those out. Otherwise, the program thinks it's kind of existing, but it's not going to work.
And again, Gary, thank you. Harold in Augusta, hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have just purchased a Windows 7 desktop machine, and it will not load. I've been able to download Adobe Flash Player, but it won't install. When I it says it's successfully completed it, but then when I go to use it, it's not there.
Hmm.
How do I get past that?
So you've downloaded it, and it goes through the installation process, but it won't show that it's working. The Flash Player is typically an add-in to your web browser. So whether it's Internet Explorer, Mozilla, Firefox, you're downloading it as a result of...
You're breaking up badly.
You're downloading the Flash Player as a result of a request from typically your web browser.
Hello?
He must have a bad connection.
Must have a bad connection. But go ahead with the explanation. Harold will...
The Adobe Flash Player is typically a direct result of a browser telling you that, you know, in order to interact with a website, you need the Flash Player. And... So Adobe has Adobe Reader for Acrobat. They have Flash Player. They have some other downloads. And it's what's called a plug-in. So it's an actual program, but it plugs in. It hooks into the browser to create this different kind of multimedia experience. And this is one of the things that Jobs had a bugaboo with, is that Adobe was lazy and he wasn't going to support Flash Player on his iDevices. And that's still happening. So...
You can get it on a desktop Mac.
Yeah, you can get it on desktop anything, but the iDevices is what he's not supporting it for.
Yeah.
So whether it's Windows or a Mac desktop, there's a call for downloading the player, but then there's a purpose to using the player. So he may have thought he's installed it, but what is he using it with?
Yeah.
So you launch the browser, and then you have to go to the environment where you're going to experience using the player. So you don't really see it installed on your system. You see it installed as a function of using the browser.
Yeah.
And then what are you using? You have to go back to where you're using it. Typically, the install tests and shows you that it's engaged your browser and that it works. If it doesn't work, then you need to, go to their site and troubleshoot, where the problem lies. So...
There you go.
It's a little complicated.
Yeah.
If it's got to give you the immediate feedback that it works.
Chris in Fredonia, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi, good afternoon. I was questioning what kind of antivirus you recommend for overseas travel. I go to China 3 to 4 times per year, and invariably I come back with viruses and the computer is compromised. I have a brand new computer, and my IT people can't solve it. And one guy will load up super anti-spyware and find some adware, and I have malware bytes on it and CCleaner, and nothing seems to work.
So are you downloading your emails to your system? And
well,
stuff is getting through? Is that's what's happening?
It's not. I'm not downloading anything, but when you plug into the hotel and just start getting to communicate with the company and get emails, then it's almost immediate. You can tell the cursor starts to jump around, and it's like you can feel that people are watching you the whole time. But
so what are you using for your email client when you're traveling?
It's just through the wireless or direct on a.
But are you using Gmail or using Outlook or using
Outlook?
Yeah. See, what I would do if I was traveling, I would leave everything up in the cloud.
Okay.
I would not be downloading anything to the system based on what you're telling me, and I would probably convert the email over to like Gmail, and just function in the cloud.
All right.
And then you're not interacting with your device. You're just in the cloud in the browser, and it's all there. And that way, you don't really have to worry about something happening on your computer while you're traveling.
Well worth it.
Yeah, because they've never been able to fix it. It was brand new in April, and it takes minutes to boot up. And then it also takes minutes to go into Word. And
well, if you want
to go to Microsoft.
Well, if you want to fix it and you really want to learn something, what you probably have are some stealth programs that are running, and they actually mutate. So when they think they're being chased after, they transform themselves into another kind of file, and it's like a never-ending battle. But when you actually can find them and delete them, then you're eliminating them so they can't mutate. So on my tips page, what I mentioned earlier is there's a way of actually finding out what programs are running in the background and then research those programs. And usually they have really weird names or just, they're just really bizarre looking. And they probably belong to the programs that are causing the problem on your system. But research them. And you can actually delete them. So you use the program. It's like I believe it's the last tip I have posted on my tips page.
Okay.
You download the free program. It exposes what's running in the background. And then you use malware bytes with the Assassin tool and just browse and go to where that file is and just, get rid of it. And that's what's slowing down your system are all these things running in the background that you can't get access to because they've kind of protected themselves, or you've deleted them, but they've come back in a different form to do the same thing.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Yep. But, good luck.
But do it, Chris. You'll be happy you did. You'll be very happy you did. Patrick in Madison. Hello.
Oh, great. I just have been listening to a lot of these calls and about all the problems people have been having. Stuff. Anyway, I have three dead PCs in my upper shelf in the closet, two Dells and a Sony Vaio. I mean, high-end PCs, laptops.
Yep.
Dead. And I mean, and I've taken them to repair shops when they needed it and blah, blah. And my memory of 10 years of these laptops is every month something is going wrong. Some registry problem or some cleaner problem or some virus, antis, anything. I mean, I'm just saying problems after problems after problems after problems. And you have to become a computer expert just to log on and get email and stuff. I don't do anything. I don't watch videos. I mean, I don't do games and all that. Real simple user. And here's my, I just want to tell all the listeners, my life completely changed when I got a Mac. A Macintosh Pro Book. I mean, no problems, nothing. And I'm going into 2.5 years with this beautiful machine, so intuitive. Took me 5 minutes to learn, the different nuances of a Mac.
Yep.
Oh, my God. There's nothing to do ever on this. Nothing. No repairs. No download. Oh, every now and then, says, would you like to update them? Sure. Boom, done. Now, is this an unusual story, or have you heard?
Well, you and I are kind of on the same wavelength here, Patrick.
No, we've heard it before.
I've experienced it. I've had a couple of PCs that are in the junk pile that we had trouble with all the time, and they were very expensive.
But I do have my story about Apple applying an update, and it took down my system, and it took me over a half a day to bring it back up because there was a well-kept secret that it affected like a quarter of a million computers when they trashed the system with an update. So I'm just saying Apple is not without its issues. I look at it as all appliances, and yes, it does operate at a different level of
higher levels,
higher level, different level of without problems and issues, but there is a different price point on their products.
There is.
So that's where people have to make their choices in terms of where they're going with a laptop choice, but you have a valid statement in that, hey, I've got three notebooks that are all basically trash, and I've been using an Apple MacBook Pro for 2.5 years and totally satisfied. So, and you're not alone. And the proof is out there, and, look at how well Apple is doing. But, again, they do make, bad decisions. I was just telling Larry, their CEO came out with a public letter of apology because they decided to snub Google on their iPhone 5, and they caught a lot of flack for that. So
their GMAP.
Yeah, and they're saying they're owning it, but I can tell you the Android GPS feature is phenomenal, and I'm like, what are you guys doing? You can't alienate the world that way or your users that way, but they make decisions like that. So, some people look at that and go, I am not playing in that space because I don't like that kind of attitude coming from a company, telling me what they're doing because they don't like it. Maybe I do. So those choices are made by individuals, and that's why we all get to make, the choices that we do.
Yeah. But I agree. I'm with you on the lack of any having, all of the trouble I have with those PCs. Yeah. Now we own like 8 or 10 devices that are Mac. And not a single,
they work nice.
And not a single problem with any of them.
Okay, that's the message I wanted to say and wanted the listeners to hear. Thank you, Larry.
All right, thanks, Patrick.
Thanks for calling.
Oh, man. Gail emailed, I'd like to watch streams of football games, but some sites freeze up so often it's not functional. And I understand that. Can I do anything to fix this? It doesn't happen on all streams.
Well, part of it is how heavy that site is getting used. Is one.
Yeah.
So it becomes a matter of the servers trying to keep up with it. The other is, how much memory is being cached in your system to allow the flow to get to your system and then play it. And it's like a tug of war.
Yeah. And I was watching the Ryder Cup yesterday on my phone while I was playing golf. And you get a lot of stop action.
Yeah.
Because it was so heavily used.
Yep. And especially if you're doing it in a cell environment, you know, you're coming off an antenna and competing with users and all the bandwidth. If you have a 4G phone, you're sucking the bandwidth even more. so pity the poor lower people using, the lot slower connection. They're just like getting stepped all over. Get out of my way.
Oh, man. It was really weird. I ripped a page. I ripped my paper, and I ripped something that tells what I'm going to be doing tomorrow on the show. But I'm going to guess and get back to tell you that we're going to get back to the kitchen tomorrow. We have the author of a cookbook. It's called Cooking Up the Good Life: Creative Recipes for the Family Table. I don't know, Pete, if you've gotten into cooking much lately.
Oh, I love cooking.
You love cooking? Well, you're going to love this. This recipe book is really good, and it's the start of our pledge drive, too, so we'll be giving some of those away.
I'm already hungry.
Thanks, Pete. Peter Green of InfoStar of Madison, our guest.